You are listening to The Kevin Smith Show.
Comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors.
Hi, folks, and welcome to The Kevin Smith Show, whoever you are, wherever you are, all around this beautiful place we call Earth. Thanks for being here at The Kevin Smith Show. Some of you are joining us for the very, very first time. Welcome aboard. I'm glad you're here, and I think you're going to be glad as well. And I hope you make a habit out of it. It's a great habit to get into. Lots of folks around this planet have the habit. Got an email just before showtime. I read it about the music. Where do we get all the music for the show? Well, I announce that on every show. But let me say again, all the music that we use on The Kevin Smith Show, all of it is from independent artists. And some of the music that we get is sent to us directly by the artists themselves. Some of it, in fact, the majority of it, we get from GarageBand.com or Music.Podshow.com. Now, if you go to either one of those, GarageBand.com or Music.Podshow.com, either one of those, there's tons of free music for you, and you can search by its genre, or you can search by the name of the band or the title of the song. But lots of free music for you. And then some of it that's not free that you can purchase for pennies, but it's all independent artists, and it's all great music. Well, the Hubble repair mission is on, and have you been keeping up with the news about the Hubble repair mission? The Hubble repair mission, of course, is flown by a space shuttle and its crew. And the Hubble is in an orbit where there's a whole lot of space debris. And the shuttle has sustained some, they're saying, minor damage to the tiles. And, because of the space debris. I still am, when I read about that, the questions all came back again. I still want to know how it is that they are tracking things that are down to 4 inches, okay? Just a little bit shorter than this pin. They are tracking those on radar. They keep track of 17,000 objects this size or bigger. And I want to know how, when you can track this, how is it that no one saw that an out-of-control Russian satellite the size of a bus was headed for another satellite, an Iridium satellite? How is it that nobody saw that coming? I think that deserves answers. I'm sure there has to be one. I have no idea what the answer could possibly be, but I still would like to know. I doubt I will ever get the answer, but I would like to know. My guest this evening is Paul Smith. Now, Paul has been with us before. It's always fascinating. If you're into remote viewing, this is one of the premier names in the field of remote viewing. Paul will join us on the other side of this break. We're going to be talking about remote viewing, but we're also going to be talking about the remote viewing conference that's coming up. Stay tuned. And welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. As I said, my guest this evening is Paul Smith. Now, Paul Smith is very well known in remote viewing circles. And if you have any interest at all in remote viewing, then you know the name Paul Smith. Major Paul Smith was very, very instrumental in the remote viewing program that was conducted by the U.S. government, and he has remained active in remote viewing and dowsing, and he is the president of the International Remote Viewing Association. Paul, welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show.
Thanks. I'm always happy to come on the air with you.
Paul, I know you've got a conference coming up. We're going to talk about that a little bit. Let me say this to our listeners. If you click on Paul's picture on my website, it will take you to the website of the IRVA. And then underneath that, there is a link to his website that has to do with dowsing. So you want to take a look at those. Just go over to my website, kevinsmithshow.com, and you click his picture or click the link and click the link that's underneath the picture. Two different websites. Paul, what is the IRVA? What is it up to?
Well, it's a nonprofit organization that we founded 10 years ago. In fact, this conference celebrates our 10th year anniversary. We founded it 10 years ago because it was clear remote viewing had come out of the closet in early 1996, and there was all kinds of misinformation about it around. And so I, along with some even more legendary people involved with remote viewing, got together, and we jointly created the organization. The idea of it was to promote accurate information about remote viewing, provide a place where people could get together and talk about it and kind of brainstorm and come up with ideas where we can move it forward into the future, hence the conference. Get together, exchange ideas, and also the organization work as a dissemination point for information, you know, to documentarists, people who are curious or interested about remote viewing and such like that. So we have several websites. We have these usually annual conferences, and the idea is just to promote remote viewing in a responsible way because we think it's important.
All right, so let's talk about why remote viewing is important. I think a lot of people would, most people would say, well, it's certainly of high interest. Why would you say it's important?
Well, there's two reasons. One is, of course, that it does help with practical things. It's not a perfect silver bullet like some people think it is. But it can help solve problems that we may not be able to solve using regular means, usually finding missing people or solving crimes, things like that. It can be used for those things. It isn't used nearly enough for those things today, but it can be used for those things. So it's important as an application to help make the world a better place. But it's important in another way. You'd want to say a philosophical way, but it has real-world implications. And that is that remote viewing, if it's true, and of course I have no question about that, remote viewing, if it's real, means that human beings aren't just meat machines walking around on the surface of the globe, right? Human beings are more than their physical bodies, because the whole idea of remote viewing is it allows you to, in some way that we don't yet understand, project your consciousness outside your body to places where, according to science, you could not possibly perceive or experience. And yet with remote viewing, you're able to do that. And that tells us that we aren't just these, you know, automated kind of biological computers walking around, that actually there is more to us than just the physical aspects that we see and touch and smell.
All right, let's go a step beyond that. Are we more than, okay, remote viewing shows us that we're more than just our physical bodies. Are we possibly more even than whatever remote viewing takes us to?
Well, yes, possibly. And I have to throw in a caveat here. Even the remote viewing proves that we're more than our physical bodies. It doesn't tell us a lot about what that more is. But what it does, and this is what's important, is it opens up the possibility for all kinds of things. And ultimately, I guess, who knows when, we'll ultimately know what those things are. But at the very least, we know that there's something more to us than the standard physical sciences want to claim.
Okay. Now, with remote viewing, you are accessing information that is, at this point, I will say, out there. Information that is out there somewhere.
Right.
What is the out there? What are we tapping into?
Well, that's a good question. There are lots of theories, lots of speculations. Nobody knows for sure, but I'm happy to speculate, okay?
Mm-hmm.
According to the kind of remote viewing I teach, the basic theory of what I teach in my courses, we tie into what's called the matrix. Now, the interesting thing here is that the remote viewing community was using the term matrix long before it was ever a movie. We were using the term probably as early as the mid-70s, I think is about when it first started to be used. And the matrix is sort of this giant repository of all information. And I suspect that really it is the world, the entire universe itself, at the quantum level, interconnected. There's this idea of quantum non-locality, and everything seems to be connected at least in some way. And so we seem to be able to access that level and obtain information about the universe without even having to go anywhere, because non-locality is this connection between things that doesn't involve causality, it doesn't involve motion, doesn't involve a sending or a transmitting of anything. And I think I've just probably confused most of your audience.
Oh, I wouldn't. I think probably not. But now, if you're talking about being able to access this information at a sort of a quantum level, is this something, an ability that you're born with, or can anybody learn to do this?
The ability is an innate part of human nature. Everyone has this part of themselves. But the using of it is something that you have to learn. It's just like everybody has the ability to walk. They have to be taught how to walk, or they have to learn how to do it, or by trial and error figure out how to do it, or whatever. Everybody has the ability to read, you know, with a few marginal cases, but in most cases everybody has the ability to read, and yet you have to be taught to do that. And that's kind of the way remote viewing works.
Okay, so then anyone can be taught to do remote viewing.
Essentially. You know, there's always outliers. You know, there's folks who, for some reason, don't quite get it. Just like any human skill, there are a few folks who don't get it. But the majority of people are able to generally learn things. I like to use, in fact, I might have even used it with you before, I like to use the idea of learning to play the violin, comparing mm-hmm. that to remote viewing. Actually, let me use piano. It's probably a better example. More people learn that. There are a few folks who can't learn to play the piano. There are a few folks who become just absolutely stellar performers. But the vast majority of people, if they get the right instruction and if they practice, can learn to play the piano competently and can actually get pretty good at it if they practice enough. And that's sort of the case with remote viewing.
All right. We'll come back to that. I want to go back to the matrix for a minute. Why did you guys decide to call it the matrix?
Well, I have to say, we didn't decide to call it that. The people who invented the kind of remote viewing that I teach named it that. Particularly one guy named Ingo Swann, who I know you know his name.
Mm-hmm.
Ingo Swann was really quite accomplished psychic, I guess you could call it. He doesn't like that term very well, but I don't know what else to call him, who worked with scientists at the Stanford Research Institute, notably among them was Hal Puthoff, and developed this methodology called controlled remote viewing. And in the process, they had to figure out kind of a model to explain how it all worked. And the evidence seemed to indicate that we accessed information at a different level than just in the natural world. At the macro level that we're at. And so what should we call it? Well, Ingo decided matrix seemed to capture it the best, and so I think that's he opted to use that term.
You know, I've heard all kinds of different terms used for that, and I've heard people talk about, they describe the same thing, and they will call it the Akashic Records.
Mm-hmm.
Would that be accurate as well, or is there some reason why that term isn't used?
Yeah, don't use the term Akashic Records, because the Akashic Records themselves tend to contain the things, presuming they exist as a thing in themselves, tend to contain the things that have to do with people's moral choices. They have to do more with human intentionality. They have to do with the way people lead their lives and all that kind of thing. There's a lot, you know, the karmic justice and that sort of stuff is all tied in with the Akashic Records.
Mm-hmm.
The matrix is kind of a bigger box than that. The matrix includes information that's got nothing to do with people. It has information about the physical structure of a planet, you know, 200,000 light years from here. It has information about trees that are growing on the slopes of Mount Everest. It has information about who or what, if anything, has ever visited the moon besides humans. You know, it's got all of that kind of information. It has all the information in the universe that's available, and it goes on beyond just human concerns.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. All right. Now, you mentioned whether or not there's ever been anyone visiting the moon besides humans. I'm pretty sure when we open the phone lines later, that question may come up. But let me just sort of leave the whole thing about remote viewing and what it is for a moment. Let's go to the conference and talk about what's going to happen there, and then we'll come back to a question that comment that you made about the moon made me think of a question that I want to ask, and it has nothing to do with the moon. But it made me think of it. So you have a conference coming up,
uh-huh.
And it is the International Remote Viewing Conference. Is that what it's called?
It is. Mm-hmm. International Remote Viewing. Well, it's actually the 2009 Remote Viewing Conference. And, of course, it's sponsored by the International Remote Viewing Association. And I'm president this year, but hopefully I won't be president next year. That's a job that we prefer to pass around. But at any rate, the conference will happen in Las Vegas at the Green Valley Resort, which is just an amazing place. And because, you know, there are downsides to an economic downturn, but there are upsides as well. And the upside is that we get this essentially six-star resort. We get to have the conference there for about three-star prices. So we're excited about that. And it's going to happen the 16th through the 19th of June. So we're talking, what are we, about a little more than a month out?
Yeah.
Something like that. Yeah, the 16th through the 19th of June, so in about a month and a week or so.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to be great. We've got more speakers, I think, than we've ever had before. It is our 10th anniversary, so it's kind of a blowout. We're trying to make it exciting and fun, and we've got a wide variety of speakers and got some workshops planned and all kinds of great stuff. Our keynote speaker we're very excited about is Roger Nelson. He, of course, is the director of the Global Consciousness Project, which I suspect you know something about.
Mm-hmm.
That's, for those of your listeners who don't, it's a project in which tries to essentially detect the consciousness field of the humans on the planet, I suppose you could say. They have these devices, really quite remarkable things. They're called random event generators. And what they do is they generate a random stream of numbers. But research in the past has showed that human consciousness can interact with these things and make them turn non-random in a way that can be detected and plotted on a chart. And they have these things running in every time zone on the planet. And when a major event happens, these things spike, and they spike oftentimes before the event occurs. It's kind of like an early warning device in a way. The prime example is the 9/11 attacks. If you go back and look at these REG graphs that were produced, they spike just a short time before the attacks actually occur, and they continue to be at a high level through the world coming to realize what had happened, and for a few days, it takes a while for it to kind of taper off, if you look at it. It's just absolutely remarkable, and they've done that with a number of events. So anyway, Roger Nelson is going to come and tell us about the Global Consciousness Project, and he's going to tie it in with remote viewing to some degree and explain how they coincide, what they have to say about each other. So he's our keynote speaker, and we're very excited about that.
All right, so that's the 16th through the 19th of June in Las Vegas, right?
Yes.
Now, people can click on your picture. It will take them to the IRVA website, and that's where they can make their reservations or get their tickets, right?
Yes, and in fact, I probably should say this one other thing. We have an early bird rate going right now, but it's been on for about a month, and unfortunately, I didn't think to get on your show soon enough. We only have a few more days while it's still live. So if they're interested and they want to save a little bit of money, they probably want to register now. So,
all right.
Anyway.
Okay, we've got just about a minute and a half here before we have to pause for a break. I want to go back to remote viewing, and let's talk about the thing that I get asked about a lot. And that's 2012. I know you guys must have taken a look at 2012. You must have taken a look at what events or possibilities are out there. One of the things I hear a lot is that there's going to be a very unambiguous mass UFO event or landing. Have you guys seen anything about that?
Well, no. At least I haven't. And I'm not sure that I've heard any of my friends say anything about that. But who knows, right? I'm the first one to say anything can happen.
Mm-hmm.
That's logically possible. Anything can happen. And frankly, I really am persuaded in the existence of UFOs as some kind of intentional. I don't want to say human because we don't know, right? Some kind of real phenomenon that isn't just a natural thing, that there is intelligence involved. There's a lot of theories, of course. Some think that they're extraterrestrial, that they come from outer space. Other folks think that they're actually temporal patterns, you know, come from the present or from the past or the future. I have no idea what they are, but I do know, and I'm absolutely persuaded that they exist.
All right, we're into a break, and we'll pick up right there when we come back. More with Paul Smith on the other side of this break. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show and to my guest, Paul Smith. Paul, let me ask you, how many remote viewers would you say are in the United States of America?
Wow. Let's see. Well, first, we probably ought to decide what we mean by remote viewers. If you mean anybody who's ever tried it, I would say there were probably tens of thousands. If we're talking about people who've maybe actually taken courses and have and practice it, or have practiced it even in the past, then we're probably down to a few thousand, I would say.
What, 4,000, 5,000?
People who've gotten, you know, like various kind of home study courses and books and things, it would be a few. It would be more than that, obviously.
So what, 5,000, 6,000?
Yeah, but you have to understand it's a very rough guess. It could be more or less than that by an order of magnitude, for all we know.
Okay, but it's a fairly sizable group.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, why you run the training courses for this, for remote viewing? Have you done any research into, or have you done a survey, ask people, why do you want to learn remote viewing?
I've not done a formal survey, although you know what, that's not a bad idea. I've never thought about doing it before, because generally I have a feel for it. You get folks that are take it for a number of reasons. Some folks want to use it as an investment tool. Some folks have ambitions to somehow apply it to do good, like find missing kids or maybe help police cases and things like that. I would say the majority, though, do it for the same reason that people do free fall parachute jumping. There's a certain thrill to it, but it also is something that says to yourself, I actually am more than I think than the average person somehow. I'm challenging myself. I'm able to do something that society says I can't do and that science claims I can't do, and yet here I proved myself that I can do it. And it's kind of a self-actualizing thing. In fact, I make the joke that in my courses, I make the joke that I might ought to get if I'm not careful, I'm going to have to get a therapist license. Because people come and take my classes, and they'll find out things about themselves that they never knew. It's very kind of a self-revelatory thing, if they put their heart into it, if they really try. And there's things you learn, because in order to learn the process, you have to learn to be excruciatingly honest with yourself. You have to be able to introspect and analyze how you're feeling about things, what the impressions you're getting. Are they real impressions, or are they your brain just making noise? You have to learn things about yourself that you've never had to learn before. And it's challenging, but I'll tell you, someone who really has put their heart into it, when they come out of that class, they really have grown. And I think people come for that reason.
Are there any sort of built-in universal barriers? For instance, if someone wants to use this for selfish purposes, it doesn't work for them. Is there anything like that?
There does not appear to be.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, there's this big argument that keeps going on in the parapsychology field, not the science part of it, but the general view out there. There are folks who think you can't use psychic abilities for gain, to make money. They think that in games of chance or whatever, you use it for gambling, then you're not going to win, because there's some kind of universal barrier that stops you from doing that. The fact is, there does not seem to be such a thing. One of my students, took my associate of remote viewing course, and had a project a year or so ago. She and some other folks used ARV against the Texas Lottery, the pick three, where you have to get three numbers in a row in order to win. The odds against winning that are 1 in 1,000, which means if you played it once a day, it would take you 3 years before you were likely to hit it by chance.
Mm-hmm.
In a two-week period, she won it twice.
Not bad.
She also had a bunch of multiples where, like, she had two numbers in a row in the correct order several times during that period. So, obviously, if there was some barrier to making money using it, she never would have been able to do that.
I had, as a guest on this show, another remote viewer, and I'll tell you who it is offline. Off the air.
Okay.
I think you probably know him. But he has used it and won his state lottery 8 times.
That's pretty impressive.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know, I hear people say, like you said, you hear people say too, that there, you know, if you want to use it for selfish purposes, it won't work for you. But then again, you know, we hear of people like your student and like this other remote viewer, where it seemed to not have any barriers in it.
Of course, there. You know, it is a bit tricky. And people say, "Well, if you can do that kind of thing, why don't you do it all the time to make money?" Well, the thing is, it's an awful lot of work.
Mm-hmm.
Because no matter how good you are at remote viewing, it's not perfect. We're dealing with human psychology here, and as anybody knows, human psychology is sometimes a bit of a fleeting thing. So, remote viewing doesn't work all the time, but it does improve your odds of success, right? And so that's what she worked at it, and she had that hand. She had those successes, and she hasn't gone back to doing it because it was so much work. But she's pretty thrilled that she accomplished that. I look at the ability as like any other faculty or ability that we have. We have strength, and we can use our strength to either rescue someone from drowning, or we can use it to rob a bank, right?
Mm-hmm.
I see this as kind of the same thing. You can use it for good purposes. You can use it for bad. And it's because it's part of us. We don't have a traffic cop that forces us to make the right choices all the time. We don't have a little guardian angel over our shoulder who won't let us do things that aren't altruistic. With you know, we do have to make money, obviously. And I guess that's mm-hmm. the other side of it. Making money is not bad. It's not wrong. Everybody has to make money.
Mm-hmm.
It just depends on what you do with it, what you intend to do with it, and it depends on whether you get greedy and lose your perspective. Money is a tool. It's not an end in itself.
All right, let's talk about, let's go back to something you said that made me think of this other question. Mm-hmm. You were talking about the moon. Now, obviously, since you brought that up, you've been asked that question.
Oh, yes.
All right, so let's ask it again. Have you taken a look at the moon and what's there?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I guess it's been a bit more than 10 years ago now. Ingo Swann asked me to be involved in a project with him, remote viewing the moon, and trying to perceive things that might be there. And as I recall, it was the far side of the moon. Now, of course, all he gave me were coordinates. I had no idea what the coordinates were. Well, I suspected it might be the moon, but I wasn't sure because they were kind of funny as far as coordinates go. But I didn't know anything that was intended here. I had no idea what the object was. And so I just did a remote viewing session on it, and I picked up some very weird things that one of these days, when Ingo gives me permission, I'll probably make public. It seemed, if my data was accurate, and of course, until we can verify it, I'm not going to make claims about that, but it really did seem that there were artifacts on the moon, that there were actually conscious entities there, that they had conveyances, that they had, I don't want to use the term bases, that's a little bit too loaded, but they at least had structures and built things, sublunar surface, I'd say subterranean, but that's not true, is it? Sublunar, whatever kind of...
Sublunarian.
Thing. Sublunarian, there you go. I don't know what to think of that data. The thing that, though, about my sessions, when I did them, after the fact, then I got to see what Ingo had done and what somebody else said. There had been one other person working on it. I got to see what they did. And, in fact, some of our data did coincide. It did correlate together, and that in itself isn't absolute evidence that's real, that the data is accurate, but it's pretty good evidence that there's something to it. And so to this day, I marvel a bit at what I got out of that, and I'm not sure what was there, but it sure did seem like there was something.
Do you have any idea as to why Ingo Swann has not allowed the release of that?
No, I don't. I don't know. He tends to like to keep things close. What do they call it? Keep his cards close to his chest, right?
Mm-hmm.
He tends to like to do that, and he tends to put things out when he feels darn good and ready to do it. And he may well have reasons that I'm not aware of, because he doesn't share everything with me, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
He feels some proprietary attachment to that material for some reason. He may have, I don't know, for all I know, he did it for someone under contract, and one of the requirements that it would say confidential. That could be. I don't know.
And that would make sense. What about Mars? Have you ever taken a look at Mars?
Once when I was at Fort Meade in the military program, our ops officer, Skip Atwater, did target me on... he targeted me on Mars. And also, of course, one of my former colleagues, Ed Dames, who's quite famous or infamous, depending on how you look at it, he targeted me on Mars a couple of times. I don't know that anything exceptional came out of those sessions, but the targeting wasn't particularly well done in Ed's case anyway, in my opinion. He didn't really target me specifically on anything. So, and, of course, I didn't know any of that until recently when they released the Stargate archives. The CIA released the archives of the program, and a lot of those sessions were in there
mm-hmm.
with little sticker stamps on them and everything. It was really quite amusing.
Now, just so I understand, for clarification here before we move on, you're saying when you took a look at Mars, you don't recall seeing anything particularly interesting.
I didn't pick up anything particularly interesting there. Of course, other folks have. Joe McMonigle was targeted on Mars by Skip Atwater and came up with some real interesting stuff. Again, Joe kind of, he's backed off from it, as I understand, in recent years. He thinks it may have been what we call overlay. But it's hard to say. I don't know.
Well, you know, one of the really interesting things about Mars, and I've done a few shows on this, a couple of shows, they found these gigantic holes in Mars. Just a big round hole, and so deep that it's absolutely dark in there. You can't see what's in it. And
that one huge space worm comes out of there, right?
Well, I don't know. I don't know. But they have found them, and NASA released photographs of them.
Huh.
And then all of a sudden, everything went quiet. You know, it was big news. They had these big holes on Mars, and then everything went quiet. And I did have a guest on the show that suggested that those may be openings into a large area in Mars where perhaps there could be intelligent beings living.
Mm-hmm.
And but it's just a fascinating thing. You know, my background is I was international police. And as a cop, one of the big things that I pay attention to is when a witness won't talk about something.
Mm-hmm.
When there's a big black hole in the testimony, that means that's exactly where I need to look. And so these big holes in Mars have become big black holes of information. Something's up with them. We have to take a break. We'll be back, folks, with Paul Smith right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening is Paul Smith. Paul, another thing that we're hearing a lot about right now is the people are seeing fleets of, for lack of a better word, I'll use the term UFO, but fleets of these things, they're observing them with night vision goggles, flying very, very high, way up, they assume, in space, and they're seeing them virtually every night. Have you guys taken a look at any of that?
I can't speak about other folks. I haven't. Of course, the one thing I have to tell you is that right now my attention has been very focused on my dissertation for my PhD. So for the last month or so, I've been not doing any extracurricular stuff like that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So I haven't. But I should give you another term. It's actually from Jacques Vallée. He uses the term unexplained aerial phenomena.
Yeah, UAPs.
Yeah.
UOPs.
So anyway, yeah, and I also have to say, in the break, I had not heard about these holes in Mars that you told me about. And in the break, I went and looked them up, I Googled them, and those are way cool.
Yeah.
I am very interested in those.
Yeah, they released the photos, and I think only a photo of one, maybe of two of them, but there's 10 of them. And then after the brief little stories, that was it, you know. It was just, okay, here they are. And then that was it. It all went silent. And like I said, when you find a black hole in someone's testimony, a witness's testimony, that's exactly where you need to go look.
Mm-hmm.
And something's up with those holes in Mars. I don't know what it is. And it could be that what's up is they just don't know any more about it. If that's the case, they ought to say, this is all we know. There's holes there.
Yeah, you'd think that. And, of course, it would be quite reasonable to think that's all they know. It's obvious from those pictures that you can't see what's inside those things,
mm-hmm.
Which is one of the intriguing things about it. It makes you want to go explore, doesn't it?
Well, it does. And I'll tell you, if you take the pictures that NASA provided, and zoom in along the, assuming that the top of the picture is north, which it probably is not, but we'll call it north. Along the north edge, just inside the hole, you'll see what looks like structures. If you zoom in, and it even looks like an A-frame roof on one of them.
Oh, interesting.
It is.
Well, I'll have to find a high enough resolution picture and look at that more closely.
Yeah, and of course you understand I'm not saying that's what it is,
right.
But that's what it looks like, that it gives that appearance.
I appreciate your approach there. So many folks would say, they'd assume it looks like it, so that's what it is. You are cautious, and I think that's important. That's very good of you.
Well, you have to be cautious until you go there and walk into one of the buildings.
That's right. At that point, you don't have to be anymore.
Yeah. But, I mean, obviously, these photographs are taken by a satellite, taken from space, mm-hmm. above the planet. And, you know, the resolution, even the best resolution photographs, are not going to have a great resolution. And so all you can say is it gives the appearance of it looks like structures. And, you know, it may be, and it may be it isn't. But it certainly gives that appearance. One of the guests I had on the show has tremendous credentials, and he said that he is absolutely certain that those are structures and that he's 100% certain that there is intelligent life living under the surface.
Well, you know, the interesting thing is that's some of the content of the remote viewing work that Joe McMonigle did with Skip Atwater, is that he did report that whatever was there was actually under the surface. And, you know, his descriptions and stuff were quite interesting. So who knows? You know, the holes are really kind of unusual. They certainly don't look like they've been poked in there by an asteroid.
No.
Or a meteor. They don't look like they're volcanic. They don't look like they're eroded. It's very interesting. I don't know what to make of it.
It looks like someone took a cookie cutter and just cut a huge hole in Mars.
Yeah, I guess the one natural explanation I could say, it just occurred to me as you were saying the cookie cutter thing, is it could have been a collapsed dome. You know, it could have been mm-hmm. some underground dome that collapsed. Those do kind of make a pattern like that. But there's a pattern, you know, a shape that's round without a lot of debris around the edges is a fairly rare thing.
Yeah.
To see in nature, so.
Well, and you don't see any ejecta. You know, if it gets, if it's an impact crater, there you see ejecta. It looks like an explosion all around it, and you don't see any of that.
All right, that's true. That's one of the things I found intriguing by it. All right, I just gotta go look. That's all there is to it.
Well, look, if you do any remote viewing on that and come up with something, we'd love to hear back from you on that.
I tell you, if I do it and I come up with something concrete, you betcha.
All right, there you heard it, folks, right here. All right, just as a side note, you said you're working on a PhD. What is your PhD going to be in?
Well, the field is philosophy, so my wife says I'm majoring in unemployment.
That's about like having a doctor's degree in theology. There's not a lot of job opportunities there.
It's probably a little more well, I don't know, actually. Pretty good job opportunities for a PhD in theology. You can always, you know, be a preacher somewhere.
Well, you have to be religious, you know, for that to happen.
Well, that's a requirement.
And I'm not, so.
In some churches, you don't, actually.
Well.
Anyway.
I majored in unemployment myself. I got a Ph.D., and I'm not a religious person, so.
Ah, I see. Okay. Well. So. My interest in philosophy is more in philosophy of mind and consciousness,
mm-hmm.
and of course that was sparked by my experiences as a remote viewer. When I got out of the retired from the Army, I wanted to find out what the current thought was on all of this stuff, not on necessarily on remote viewing itself, but consciousness and philosophy of mind, what the mind is, and all that. And the place to go for that is philosophy. People would think psychology, but that's actually not exactly the place if you want to find out the bottom line on things. Psychology is, of course, a very valuable discipline, and I probably would have got into that if I had not done philosophy. But philosophy kind of is where the rubber meets the road with all of our disciplines. Whatever gets out into the scientific world, at least conceptually, usually starts with a philosopher somewhere. So I found it very interesting, very rewarding, and I've learned a lot. I'll tell you, I learned all kinds of things that I thought were true that weren't. So that's been helpful. But now I'm in the dissertation phase. I'm in the 12th year of a 6-year program, and they're holding my feet to the fire. So
one of the things that I found interesting, and then we'll get back to remote viewing, is when you get into epistemology. Mm-hmm. How do you know that you know? And once you really start trying to nail down how you know that you know, it's pretty hard to do sometimes.
Well, you get a vicious regress there. How do you know you know? And then how do you know that you know that you know?
Yeah.
And then how do you know that you know that you know that you know?
Yeah. Well, it's like looking into a mirror in front of you that's reflecting a mirror behind you. It's endless.
Yeah. I always get a kick out of what Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld said early on in the whole Iraqi misadventure. He said, and he was absolutely right about this, but the press made fun of him. He said, there are things that you know that you know, there are things that you know that you don't know, but the ones that really get you in trouble are the things that you don't know that you don't know.
And he's exactly right. He was right.
It sounds silly as heck, but he was absolutely right.
Yeah, if you stop and think about it, that is true. And one of the things that I say here on this show often is that if you take everything, the entire totality of everything that every human on this planet knows, you put it all in one pile, it is microscopic compared to what there is yet to know.
Absolutely, and that's even before you take out the stuff that we think we know that we don't.
That's true. But it's that last category, the things that you don't know. That's the big one. All right, when we come back, more on remote viewing. I want to talk with you about what's happened since you retired from the Army. We'll be back, folks, right after this break. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show and to my guest, Paul Smith. Paul, you mentioned a moment ago that you had retired from the Army. Since retiring from the Army, you have gotten into teaching people remote viewing, which you learned while you were in the Army. Have you?
Yes, and I want to thank the American taxpayers for covering that for me.
Okay, well, all right. Now, they don't get thanked very often.
No, they don't.
All right, so let me ask this question. Have you, since you've begun to teach remote viewing to others, and you founded this organization, or you were in on the founding of this organization, and you're on radio and TV, and you've got books and all of this stuff, have you gotten any kind of harassment or anybody putting a little pressure on you here and there from the government?
Not from the government. The only harassment I get is from skeptics.
Yeah.
Oftentimes after a radio show, I'll get an email that says, "How can you believe this stuff? That's just, if you're so smart, if you can do that, then tell me what's written on the side of my computer monitor." You know, I get all these kind of things, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's just from folks who don't understand remote viewing, don't believe in it. But no, the government has never harassed me. In fact, I've gotten a lot of interest from military and government folks who would like to have this ability back in the military or back in the government, and just have not been able to figure out how to do it. In fact, not too long ago, in January, I and Hal Putoff, of course, who is the founder of the remote viewing program at SRI, he and I were invited down to the secure area at Lackland Air Force Base to give a lecture on operational remote viewing to the intelligence folks down there. They found it very interesting, and they wanted to know more about it. Whether anything comes of that, I don't know. But they're definitely, the military itself is actually kind of interested in it. So,
well, that being the case, how did the program get canceled, and why?
Well, it got canceled for two reasons. One was its own fault. Well, three reasons, really. One was its own fault, one was the fault of the people who were managing it, and one was the fault of the people who it got given to. The way it was its own fault is that there got to be some folks in it who really were kind of not particularly, they were kind of sloppy in their protocols and stuff. They didn't pursue it in a rigorous way, and I'm not going to lay it completely in their fault, because to some degree, the management at the Defense Intelligence Agency that owned the program didn't like it. The general who was in charge, this guy named General Soyster, he'd been the one that kicked it out of the Army originally, and then when he took over as the commanding general of the organization, of DIA later on, he discovered the program was still alive and being run by DIA, and he said, he's famous for saying, "I thought I got rid of that tar baby a long time ago." So he proceeded to, he couldn't kill it because there was a bunch of senators who were very interested in it and supported it, and some congressmen as well. He couldn't kill the program, but he certainly could mismanage it, which is exactly what happened. He put bad managers in charge, not all of them, but towards the end particularly, the bad managers in charge. They didn't replace people when they moved. They just kind of marginalized the whole thing. And so the unit itself was not in really great shape at the time it got transferred to the CIA. And the CIA didn't want it. The director of the CIA, had just been appointed by Clinton, was famous for kicking people out of his office. They even brought up the mention of remote viewing. And so he comes in to take over the agency, and here's his proposal to bring in a remote viewing unit, which he despised, frankly. And it was just all the wrong things happening at the wrong time. At least that's one way of looking at it. You can look at it that all the right things happened at the right time to bring it out into the civilian world. So,
well, yeah.
You look at it,
yeah.
I guess.
Now, I'm a little curious about this. You have a general that hates the program. You have a director of the CIA who hates it. Why?
Well, these guys were, you know, hard-headed left-brain types, right? In fact, one of them, the director of the CIA at the time, as I recall, I may be misremembering, but I think I remember it, he was a nuclear physicist. So very invested in the current scientific paradigm, very much disturbed that anyone would possibly believe that things that can happen contrary to how we understand the laws of physics today. And there were a lot of skeptics in the military and in the government when the program was going, and the skeptics and the supporters often got into skirmishes and stuff over funding and over whether the project was going to continue or not and that kind of thing. So it's really not surprising that happened. What's surprising is that it lasted as long as it did in that kind of environment. So
you mentioned that he was really into the scientific paradigm and opposed to anything that didn't fit the laws of physics and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
I had Dr. Michio Kaku here on the show. Do you know who he is?
Oh, yeah.
Dr. Michio Kaku. I don't think anybody on this planet would deny that the guy is a brilliant physicist. And, of course, one of the, if not the father, certainly one of the fathers of the quantum string theory.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
His physics textbooks are used in every major university in America.
Mm-hmm.
And I said to him when he was talking about the laws of physics, I said, look, isn't it really the truth that there are no laws of physics? Isn't it really the truth that what we call the laws of physics are just descriptions of our current understanding, and some smart guy is going to come along and step over one of those and that we think it's a law, think it's a boundary, and he's just going to step over it with new ideas, just like Einstein did.
Mm-hmm.
And Dr. Kaku said, absolutely. He said, that's absolutely true.
Well, we know that the quantum physics and relativity theory, quantum physics deals with the very small, relativity theory deals with the very big and the very fast, that so far those two things haven't been reconciled.
Mm-hmm.
We already know that just from a science perspective there's a big hole in our understanding. But when you throw in all the amazing parapsychology data that's out there, the very well-conducted scientific-style research that's been done in parapsychology, and still there's a phenomenon demonstrated by that research, it shows that science has nowhere near a handle on the universe. And we made great strides. I don't want to put science down because it's made some impressive kinds of things, strides and progress. But still, there are some scientists who get a bit arrogant and think we know everything when in fact we don't. And there's still a lot to be found out. So,
well, let's talk about parapsychology and science for a moment. And let me say to the audience, I will open the telephone lines a little bit later. But I've got a couple of things we need to talk with soon-to-be Dr. Smith about.
Let me mm-hmm. Take a little bit of a sidetrack here and then come back to what you're going to ask.
Mm-hmm.
Is it okay if I talk about this one URL that's on your page, the one that's under my picture that says Paul's other website?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I want to tell folks about that. It's a bit unusual because it's actually free. There's a product on there that's free. It's a documentary on dowsing on a DVD that we're offering to folks if they're even at all interested in dowsing. The fact is, given the way things are today, it helps to improve your edge on anything, and dowsing is one thing you can do. And that's something that I've been interested in, and I have this dowsing DVD product that you can buy and all that. But the producers of that decided that they would market the documentary part of that, well, market it for free. And so that's what that website is. You can go there, you can click on that URL, it says Paul's other website, you can go there and you can get a free DVD. Now, of course, it's a marketing thing, I'll admit that, right? And so you actually will get a coupon for the DVD set as well if you decide you want to buy it. It gives you a pretty deep discount on it. But if you don't worry about that. I'd love to have you buy it, but the fact is the DVD itself is available. That the documentary part, I think you'll find very interesting. There's interviews with myself, with Hal Putoff, with Mel Riley, and one of the famous remote viewers, with a bunch of folks that have been involved with dowsing, and I think that folks will find it, and it's free. So I just wanted to emphasize that. Okay, so now that I've explained that, let's go ahead. What did you want to ask?
Well, and this actually sort of dovetails into that too. We've been talking about these guys that are sort of left brain and by the way, that's not necessarily bad because at least it's brain. There are some folks that are no brain, so these guys are left brain, and they've got this they're locked into this scientific paradigm, and they don't want to consider anything, any data from parapsychology. Well, there is a guy that we have on this show from time to time, Dr. Gerald Epling. Dr. Gerald Epling is an expert in memory, but he's been doing some research for the past several years with plants that is phenomenal. And using very sensitive scientific sensors that literally record the data, he has been able to prove that plants, we know they respond to music. We know if you talk to them, they respond to that. But he's been able to prove they respond to your thought.
Uh-huh.
So that throws us back into this matrix thing that you were talking about, that everything is in some way, at some level, connected. We know plants don't have a brain, but they respond, they give a response to thoughts about them. And it's a measurable response, and he's been able to measure it and record it. So, you know, that might be a little bit of data that would shore up for folks that think that there is no such thing as this matrix of information. They need to take a look at this stuff with Dr. Gerald Epling, and they need to explain it. You know, if it doesn't mean that things are connected at some level, then what does it mean?
Well, you know, and that, of course, ties in right with what I was talking about earlier in the remote viewing conference with Roger Nelson and his Global Consciousness Project. I mean, that's right there. It's, here we are talking interconnectedness about interconnectedness, aren't we?
Mm-hmm. That's true.
But it's really the case. Everything does seem to be interconnected in some way. The research that you just mentioned with Gerald Epling, that brings to mind some really early stuff done by Cleve Baxter. You mm-hmm. probably have heard
sure.
of him. Cleve, of course, was kind of a pioneer in polygraphy and the lie detector stuff. In fact, the CIA still contracts with him, and he's in his 80s, as an expert in polygraphy. Well, Cleve Baxter did an experiment where he hooked plant up to a polygraph, and then he did a couple of things. He snipped off a leaf, and the plant reacted. And then he just thought about snipping off a leaf, and the plant reacted.
Mm-hmm.
So, and the funny thing is that MythBusters on TV, I forget, is it Discovery? It's on, whatever. MythBusters actually tried to replicate his experiment with the plants and the leaves,
mm-hmm.
and they actually succeeded in replicating it. Their plant reacted when they even thought about hurting it. And then they, of course, tried to dismiss it because they're hard science guys, right? And so they came up with some experiment that supposedly showed it didn't work. But yeah, it's just all evidence that there's much more going on than science is ready to acknowledge yet.
Well, you know, science at one point all agreed the Earth was flat.
Yep.
The telephone line is open, folks, at 602-539-9580, 602-539-9580, or toll-free 1-888-223-4599. And if you have a question about remote viewing or a comment or about dowsing, you have the right person right here. Paul Smith is the person to ask about this. Paul, you actually wrote the technical manual on remote viewing for the military, didn't you?
Yeah. It's what's commonly called the training manual, although it wasn't intended to be a do-it-yourself kind of thing. But yes, I wrote it, but I have to give credit where credit is due. I had help from folks. The other folks that trained with Ingo Swan contributed, and I did the writing, but you know, it was a joint effort. It was kind of a teamwork kind of a thing.
All right. Now, in the years that you've been doing remote viewing, and I know there are probably some things that you are not able to talk about, but in the years that you've been doing remote viewing, what would you consider to be the weirdest thing that you ran across?
Weirdest? Oh, gosh.
Mm-hmm. Either on Earth or off.
Are you talking about military and later, or just military?
Well, no. All the time you've been doing remote viewing.
Okay. Well, the moon stuff was pretty weird that I told you about. In fact, I'll tell you one detail. I haven't shared this with anybody before because it sounds so weird. One of the things I seem to have picked up there, for whatever it's worth, seemed to be a conveyance, a spaceship, if you will, that seemed to be at least floating or flying out of one of these holes in the moon, whatever. And it seemed to be not just an artifact, but it seemed to also be living itself, which was kind of a weird sort of thing. It's like the thing itself was alive, even though it was also a machine of some sort. And that didn't make sense to me at the time, and it still doesn't make much sense to me now, except that I have, since then, popular culture has caught up with that idea or that experience I had, because, of course, in in Stargate SG, no, yeah, Stargate, no, not Stargate SG, Stargate Atlantis, the Wraith starships are grown, they're living things, right?
Okay.
And then wasn't there something like that in, I can't think of that other series, the real famous one that was on TV.
Star Trek?
Sci-Fi Channel. Not Star Trek, but it's still on, it's about to be done, about the people fleeing the Cylons. What's the name of that show?
Oh, I'm not sure. I know what you're talking about.
Battlestar
Tell you what.
Galactica.
Yeah, Battlestar Galactica.
Yeah. There was some kind of living ship in there, too, I think. And I'm thinking, that's just weird. I had this impression, 15 years ago, and then now popular culture has these kind of things. I don't know what to think of all that. But that was weird. That was pretty darn weird.
All right, let's go to the telephone line. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Clay from Arkansas.
Hello, Clay.
I wondered, have you ever run across any ghost or forms of energy? And I'll take the answer offline.
All right.
Hey, Clay, I was just up in Arkansas during spring break. We went up to the Ponca area on the Buffalo River. I love it up there. So if you live up there, you're lucky. As far as ghosts and energy, it's hard to say. I've run into... I experienced running into folks out there. Of course, at targets and things, you run into people. Whether they're alive or not, I don't know. I have not encountered anything that I would count as a ghost. I don't know.
Okay.
That's the best I can answer you. I'm sorry.
All right. Let's go to the phone line. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name, where are you calling from?
Hi, Kevin. It's Debbie from Columbus.
Hi, Debbie. You're going to need to speak right into your telephone. We can barely hear you.
Interesting show tonight. I wanted to ask Paul a question.
Okay.
And, Paul, I'm just kind of curious, how would remote viewing be compared to, someone like myself, because I'm a holistic healer and I heal with thought, just being able to, just zoom in and look at a particular, building or structure or something and just zoom in and basically observe what's going on. Is there a difference?
Well, not really. Remote viewing is, it's really a form of controlled clairvoyance is what it is. Important to it is the protocol that surrounds it. In a remote viewing, the viewer has to be blind to the target. You don't want the viewer to know what the target is. You use an indirect means of getting them to the target to perceive what's there. Because if they know what it is up front, then everything they can imagine about it, everything they know about it, all of that's right there in their heads. And sorting that out from the signal is really kind of difficult sometimes. That's what we call mental noise. And anybody who's had any psychic experiences at all knows that mental noise is the biggest trouble to deal with in trying to find out what the real information is, right? And so a remote viewer is supposed to be blind to the target, and in a true remote viewing protocol, it should be a target that there really is information about. So, in other words, a lot of remote viewers want to work on UFO targets, they want to work on anomalies and stuff, and those are fun to do, but unless there's a way of getting feedback on them, you never know if what you've got is really true or not. But as far as just perceiving a target as you described, that's really kind of in general terms what remote viewing does.
Okay, Debbie, thank you so much for the call. And let's see. All right, caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hey, Kevin, this is Don. Call from Phoenix. How you doing?
Good.
Hey, Paul, how you doing?
Pretty good.
Yeah, you guys were talking about it, and I called in. I was going to tell you that was Battlestar Galactica, but I was.
I remember finally.
I see you answered that. I sure didn't want no spoilers there. But we just started the second half of the second season, and man, I got hooked on that big time.
Is that right?
Is one great show.
Yeah, I'll tell you, my memory is hammered by all this work I'm doing on my dissertation. And when I get involved in that, I can't remember anything except that stuff. You know, it's very intense, and it's driving me nuts. But anyway,
yeah
Battlestar Galactica, very interesting. Of course, I was around when it was when the first series was out. So
well,
that kind of dates
still,
me a bit.
I'm 58, and so I've been around, like Kevin would say,
okay.
For old as dirt. And so... So, yeah, anyways, I didn't catch it. You guys started talking something about 2012, and I had to walk away from the computer. So what's the deal in 2012? Are we going to see some great earth changes, or are we going to see some type of spiritual awakening?
Well, I kind of tried to dodge the subject before. I think Kevin figured that out. But I have to admit, I'll be straightforward with you, I'm a 2012 skeptic. One of the interesting things about becoming a remote viewer and seeing evidence of this just amazing stuff is that I've actually gotten more skeptical about other things. And I generally know where this whole notion of 2012 came from. It comes from a misinterpretation of the Mayan calendar and then from sensationalizing that actually some of my colleagues got involved in doing. One of them claimed he couldn't remote view past 2012. Well, that I just don't believe. And so anyway, it's got, I think it's been blown out of proportion. Now, there's other folks out there I'm sure who will disagree with me, but I frankly don't think that anything unusual as far as calamities and things are going to occur just because we get to 2012. Now, it doesn't rule out that something could happen, you know, like cataclysmic volcanic eruption or who knows what, but I don't think it's tied to the calendar date myself.
Well, that sounds good to me.
All right.
I assume it'd be that way, or a spiritual awakening, but...
yeah.
I think you were referring to Ed Dames, right?
I want to be nice to Ed. He and I are still friends, despite some let's just say a few differences of opinion. And I have to say that Ed is actually going to be at the remote viewing conference. He's not one of our speakers, but he's doing a presentation associated with... it's an evening event, which we're finding interesting. He's going to present his latest documentary, and then he's going to stand for questions afterwards. And I think being available for questions, I think a lot of people are going to appreciate being able to ask him about some of this stuff. So,
all right, guys, we are into a break, and we'll take more telephone calls for Paul Smith on the other side of this break. So get your fingers ready to do the dialing, and we'll pick up right there. And welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. We're talking this evening with Paul Smith. And the telephone line is open, 602-539-9580, or toll free at 888-223-4599. Now, we had some callers trying to get in right when we were just about to go to break, and you couldn't get in. Well, it's open now, and we'd love to hear from you. If you have a question for Paul about remote viewing, or a comment, or if you have a question about dowsing and you want to know something about that, or a comment about that, we'd be glad to hear from you. And, Paul, let's go straight to the telephone line. Caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Kevin, this is Brent from Wyoming.
Okay, Brent, speak right into the telephone.
First, Brent, where in Wyoming are you?
A little town called Buffalo, intersection of I-25 and I-90.
Yeah, I've been to Buffalo.
You have?
Oh, yeah. I spent a lot of time in Wyoming, over in Star Valley.
After in that area, yeah, okay. Yeah. Now, here's a question for you. Actually, I have a couple of comments for Kevin first.
All right.
Kevin, if you look on your website, today is Wednesday.
Oh, does it say Tuesday?
Yeah.
Okay. Sorry about that, folks.
And what's this thing with the XML file getting? I can't get into your contact page.
Okay. Well, I haven't said anything about it on the air. I did talk about us getting hit 3 times last week. We've been hit 2 times this week, and so apparently we got hit again today. All right, your question for Paul?
Now, I'm going to ask, how beneficial is meditation in being able to go into a deep meditative state for facilitating remote viewing?
Interesting that you should ask that, because I've actually been doing some research lately for my dissertation that involves meditation and being used in some various parapsychology tests. Meditation seems to help. Now, you don't meditate during a remote viewing session, but just having the ability to kind of calm yourself, quiet your mind, discipline your mind to some degree, that seems to facilitate the remote viewing process. Research tends to indicate that being able to meditate does help somewhat. Now, it's hard to measure how much it helps, but of course in a thing like this, every help is welcome. So it plays a role. It can be useful.
Okay, now another real quick question. I only have one hand that works. How is dowsing possible with one hand?
Sure. You can do it with a pendulum. I'm sorry?
Okay.
You can do it with one L rod.
Okay, hold up, Brent. Go ahead, Paul.
Okay. You can do it with a pendulum. You can do it with one L rod. And when you get very proficient at it, there are people who don't even use a device at all. They just sort of go on body sensations. And people who are good, that seems to work for them, too. So.
Okay. I'll probably order your DVD in a couple days.
Thanks. I'd be happy to have you do that. Thanks.
All right. Thank you so much for the call, Brent. The telephone line is open, ladies and gentlemen. And the telephone number is 602-539-9580. Or toll-free at 1-888-223-4599. All right, caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Yes, good evening. This is Kevin from Northern Alberta calling.
Hello, Kevin.
Hi, Kevin.
Good first name.
Yeah, we have lots of Kevins that listen to this show.
Yeah.
And as I told Kevin... go ahead.
No, you go ahead, Paul.
Well, I was going to say, as I told Kevin, actually my little brother is also named Kevin Smith.
I've learned, and this is... look, I can't say that I've got scientific evidence for this, but I have learned that all of the great geniuses alive today are named Kevin.
I concur.
What's on your mind this evening, Kevin?
I wanted to ask Paul, anybody that's been involved in the remote viewing projects, have they suffered any psychological problems from their work that they have done, or are there any dangers in remote viewing?
That's an excellent question. I'm glad you asked it, because there's a lot of confusion about this out there. No, the answer to that is actually no. Now, there's a caveat. There are probably some folks who have gone a little dingy because they already had some kind of tendency toward I don't know what you want to call it, being unbalanced or whatever, right? And then when they got involved in remote viewing, it was kind of a catalyst to push them off the edge a little bit. But no one has, because of remote viewing itself, has had any mental problems. There's just no documentation for that. And of course, one very prominent remote viewer claims in his book that he had a psychotic break or something like that. It had to do with remote viewing and all that. It's not true. It was for dramatic purposes.
Okay.
So remote viewing, at least as far as I've ever been able to determine, is perfectly safe.
Okay. So we wouldn't end up like Ben Kingsley then.
Oh no! Did you watch Suspect Zero?
No,
that's not. I've never heard of anything like that happening. Of course, I know the director pretty well for the movie, and it was really done that way to give some dramatic tension to the movie and to move it along and all that. I would have actually much preferred to see it done differently, but I wasn't involved in the production of it, so I couldn't give him my advice. But I got to know him afterwards. But anyway.
All right, Kevin, thank you so much for the call. Interesting question, and I have to admit, a question I had not thought of. The telephone number is 602-539-9580 or 1-888-223-4599. Those telephone numbers will work from anywhere in the world. If you live in the United States or Canada, please use one of those numbers. If you live outside of the United States or Canada, you can always use our flash message feature. You just go to my website, scroll down underneath Paul's picture. You'll see a link that says flash message, and you can use that. Send me a flash message with your question or comment. I will read it for Paul, and he can make whatever comments he wishes to make as if you had phoned in. But if you're in the USA or you're in Canada, please use one of those telephone numbers. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Name is Scott from Los Angeles.
Okay, Scott. Your question or comment?
Okay. I'm sorry?
Your question or your comment, please.
Okay. I read Paul Smith's book, Reading the Enemy's Mind, I believe. And I was very, very interested in it because I've had some, I guess you would call them remote viewing experiences, but they are were related to dreams I had rather than an actual remote viewing attempt. And I don't know if you'd be interested in hearing some of those or not, but I'd be happy to talk about them if we have time.
Well, I'll tell you, we have a total of 3 minutes. And you still got two left.
By the way, thanks for reading my book. I appreciate it.
Okay, I found it very interesting, although it wasn't... The reason I picked it up was because of these experiences that I had. And I thought that it would shed some light on it. And I have to say that although it was a very, very good read, it didn't really seem to shed any light. And so that's why I'm calling now, is maybe you could say something about where you think dreams fit in.
That's good. So let me respond to that real quick, and then you can work that in. I recommend that if you want to find about dream ESP, you look up Dale Graff, G-R-A-F-F. In fact, Dale's going to be at the conference. In fact, at the remote viewing conference, he's one of our speakers. But his specialty is dream ESP, and you're right. I didn't talk much about that in the book because we're working more at conscious awareness. You know, we're awakening ESP. So anyway, okay, go ahead with your question.
Well, it's not so much as a question as just as an example. I had a dream that my girlfriend, her niece was out of the country, and she has a green card, and she was due to be coming back in about a month. And one morning, it was like REM sleep, I just had this the most vivid dream that you could imagine. And this has happened to me a few times during my life. But the dream was that she was having trouble through some government intervention, that she was having trouble coming back in her native country. And I woke up, and I leaned over to my girlfriend, and I told her about this dream. And I said, your niece is having trouble coming in to the country. And 20 minutes later, the telephone rang, and it was her calling from out of the country. and she was having trouble coming in because she needed some school paperwork faxed so that she could submit it to the government. And I thought that was an extremely uncanny coincidence.
Yes, and there's very good reason to think that you got kind of a precognitive input while you were dreaming, and oftentimes we're more susceptible to these kind of things when we're dreaming, that you got that in advance, and that's what tipped you off. You'd be surprised how often people have these kind of experiences, but they don't talk about it because they think it's weird or people look at them funny, but it's normal. It's really quite normal.
All right. Very interesting. Scott, thanks for the call. And are you still with me, Scott?
Yes, I am.
All right. How are you listening to the show tonight?
I'm streaming it over my iPhone.
Okay. Outstanding. Okay.
That's amazing.
Outstanding. Thank you so much for the call. But one more question. Are you a first-time caller?
No, actually, I called once before.
Okay.
And it was with Paul Smith, too. So.
Oh, okay. All right. Thanks for the call. Yeah. Well, see, lots of people have those strange dreams that seem to come true and then wonder, how did that happen? Because sometimes, you know, they think, well, you know, I've never had anything like that happen before. I don't think I'm psychic, but maybe I am. So how did that happen? I'm not sure how it happens, but I am sure it does happen. It's happened to me. All right, caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show, and I got to ask you a question. If the break takes over, do you want to hang on through the break?
Sure will.
Okay, your first name and where are you calling from?
Bob from California.
Okay, Bob.
Hello, Bob.
Hello.
Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, I just had a quick question for Paul, and then I'll hang up.
Okay.
The question would be... Is the third eye chakra connected to out-of-body experiences and remote viewing? And does the third eye chakra really exist? Thank you.
I have to plead agnosticism on chakras. I don't know what to make of them. Third eye chakra, I don't know. Maybe there's something to it. Maybe not. I just do it. You know, I don't worry too much about the metaphysics of it. I just do the remote viewing, and that's about all I can tell you. Sorry, not very informative, but...
Well, you know, each religion has its own terms and definitions and explanations for pretty much the same things we're all observing. They come at it, you know, from a different point of view, and they describe it differently, but it seems that they're all talking about the same things that we observe, and this is true even of metaphysics. All right, we have to take a break. When we come back, we'll take more of your calls. We'll be on Final Approach. That means if you're going to call, be ready immediately after the break. We'll be back right after this. And welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest is Paul Smith, and the telephone line is open. The telephone number is 602-539-9580 or toll-free at 888-223-4599. We can probably take one more call, maybe two, but you have to call right now. Paul, this thing about dreams, I mean, there's a lot of different psychic things that happen that really don't fall into the same basket with remote viewing, but you do say that remote viewing is in some way a sort of a psychic operation, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
How do you go about activating someone using their psychic ability?
Well, It's like other things that we do in life, other skills or experiences we have. You basically have to put the person in the environment where they have to do it, or you know, sink or swim, essentially. You put them in an environment where you increase the possibility that it will happen. You of course, up front, teach them some of the things to expect, some of the things to do to increase the chances that they're going to succeed. Maybe some theory training, as we do, some methodology that you can follow that is aimed at helping accomplish that. And then you put them in that environment, and then they try and do what it is that you've taught them to do, and in most cases it works. It happens. So
sort of like learning to ride a bicycle. You got to get on the bike and give it a try, and eventually you learn to keep your balance.
Yes. Very much so.
All right, let's go to the phone line for our final call tonight. Caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hello, Kevin. This is Stefan from Quebec City. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you doing, Stefan?
I'm fantastic. Mr. Smith, my question for you is whether you think or not indigenous people from around the world have had perhaps their own version of remote viewing in the past, and what are your views on that?
Oh, of course they do. Yeah. I haven't got into, what is it called, ethology, I think? I think that's what the field is called. I haven't got into researching any of that stuff in detail, but of course you can't be associated in parapsychology and remote viewing and all that for, and reading all these other sources without being aware of things that in other cultures correspond to remote viewing. Of course, the Aborigines in Australia have a lot of interesting traditions about this. In fact, I was just reading something about that in a parapsychology book a while back, that the Aborigines have this thing. I'm trying to think what they call it, something like far-seeing or something like that, which is basically remote viewing, right, the terminology, where they are able to actually find out where game is and where they need to go to find water and all those kinds of things. So, and I've heard of this similar things in South America, the indigenous folks in South America and Africa, places like that. So, yeah, I'm sure that they've known about this capability, and because they aren't blessed with modern science, they've never been taught that it's impossible.
Oh. Now, Stefan...
Kevin, as always, thank you for this great show.
Well, thank you, but I have a question for you. You are, here we say Native Americans, in Canada you say First Nation. Am I correct?
Yeah, that's correct.
So let me turn the question to you. Have you run across this sort of practice or this sort of ability among First Nation?
Well, that's I suppose that's why I was asking that from Mr. Smith, is because there's one ceremony in particular which I won't describe in detail, but I guess I can mention its name. It's called the Shaking Tent Ceremony.
Mm-hmm.
And in that ceremony, we don't say shaman, we say medicine man, steps into that tent, and something happens where he actually goes beyond himself, is what I would say, or I don't know how the whole process would work. But I was wondering if that was tied in with remote viewing, and from what Mr. Smith is saying, it seems that it is. So, and of course, as we were saying with dream ESP, that's quite common with my people, and I'm sure with everybody, you know, elsewhere on the planet as well. So this is really encouraging. I just really enjoy learning more about this subject and looking forward to seeing what comes out of it in the future.
Well, thank you for listening in and for your good question.
Excellent question. Thanks, Stefan.
Yep.
All right. Let me check. We have a message flashing over here, so let me just check very quickly. It says how to stream over iPhone. The way you do that is you click that link on my site that says iRadio LA, and they have all the instructions over there. That's our affiliate station over in Los Angeles. And so go over there, and you too can stream this show over iPhone. I got two of those, two messages wanting to know about that and telling me how you do that. Okay, so go to iradiola.com, And you can find the instructions on how to do that. They provide that service. So, yeah, Paul, we're now internet radio, AM, FM, shortwave, internet TV, and iPhones and cell phones.
It's a miracle.
We're everywhere. Okay, now we've just got a few minutes left here, and we've got to call this one a wrap. So let me ask you to once again give us the information about this upcoming conference.
Okay, it's going to be the 19th through the 19th through the 21st in Las Vegas, Nevada, at the Green Valley Resort.
Oh, now wait a minute. Earlier you told us the 16th through the 19th.
Oh, no. Did I say that?
Yeah.
I didn't say the 19th to the 21st. Oh,
no.
Man. Shoot me in the head.
Okay, 19th through the 21st.
It's the 19th through the 21st, yes.
Of June.
How I got that. Of June. 19 through 21 June. And it's going to be at the Green Valley Resort in Las Vegas. The 19th through the 21st of June. Green Valley, Las Vegas. And you can go to, just click on my picture on Kevin's page, or if you don't have that up, you can go to IRVA Conference, that's IRVA, and then the word conference.org, and that will take you right to the website, and you can find out all about it.
Outstanding. And you're going to have some outstanding people there. You are, of course, going to be there. Ed Dames is going to be there. Who else did you say? Let's see. Roger Nelson's going to be there.
Roger Nelson, Dale Graff, who many folks know, Lynn Buchanan and some of his students will be speaking. Melvin Morse, who's just an amazing guy to listen to. He is a expert in children's near-death experiences, has a number of best-selling books on that phenomenon. He's a pediatrician who's had an opportunity to study many of those things. He's gotten into remote viewing and REG stuff that I mentioned earlier, and he's got what looks to be a very exciting presentation. So Melvin Morse is going to be there. I don't have my list in front of me. I had it. Oh, no, I do have it in front of me. John Alexander, some of you folks know him. Skip Atwater, who's basically runs the Monroe Institute, Bob Monroe's old organization. Courtney Brown is going to talk about conducting public scientific experiments. That should be intriguing. Pam Coronado, who's a forensic psychic, she did a study where she compared psychics and remote viewers and what they can learn from each other. Jeffrey Mishlov, famous consciousness researcher, he's going to be there, and so on and so on. There's just the Stephen Schwartz, Russell Targ. It's amazing. We've got the biggest bill we've ever had.
All right, Paul, we're out of time. If you will stay on the line with me for a moment. And, wow, folks, what can I say? We appreciate Paul for being with us. I appreciate you for being here as well. Thanks for everyone who called in, and thanks for everyone who sent a flash message. My friends call me Steel Eye. My enemies do, too. You can call me whatever you want. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time, so long, everybody.